Hey guys, welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. My name is Blair.
And I'm Burnsy. Dad's Group is about helping fathers, helping families. And that's what we aim to do on this podcast by bringing you conversations that will build up your fathering and support the growth of your family.
Absolutely. Last week, we had the privilege of meeting Psych Sarah, who will be co-hosting specific episodes with us, where we'll be interviewing psychologists and other health practitioners. That word is hard to say. So if you have not had the chance to hear last week's episode and meet Sarah, we encourage you to do that. But for this week, Burnsy, who have we got?
Yeah, this week we've got an absolutely fascinating interview and an incredible guest. We have Jeff Braley, who is a social researcher and strategic advisor and director of solutions at the internationally recognized firm McCrindle. You might have heard of them before. They've released a whole bunch of stuff, particularly around the different generations. So you might have seen like the different infographics that they produce. But in this episode, Jeff helped us to imagine what the world could look like in the future for our kids. And so we covered off everything from education to family life, relationships, employment, work, society, culture. We covered the whole thing. And he does a really great intro at the start about the different generations, going right to the builder's generation, you know, wartime, right through to Gen Alpha today. So really great to get your head wrapped around, some of the different things that impact each generation and how that in turn impacts how we parent. So we looked at even like, how did our grandparents get parented and how they parent our parents and how did our parents parent us? So really fascinating stuff. Some really great insights into even just like the impacts of AI and sale prices of houses. We covered everything. It's great. So yeah, really good one for our dads and all our family members listening to this in terms of what does the future look like and what will that look like for our kids?
Spaceships and aliens.
That's it, man. Called it. Yep. So we hope you enjoy this episode with Jeff Braley. Enjoy. Welcome to the Dad's Group podcast, Jeff. Such a pleasure to have you here with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Stoked to be here. Great topic. And really excited to be able to share my experience and a few stats as well about parenting. So yeah, a lot of fun.
Super cool. I'm so excited for this. I'm such a nerd for data and statistics and social commentary. But before we jump into that, that's just a little teaser for the dads listening. But I wonder if we could start with just a bit of an introduction of yourself and your family and the work that you do.
Yeah, so I'm married, my beautiful wife, Crystal. We've got three kids, so girl is the eldest, who's 9, and then two boys, so 7 and 3. So it's a pretty wild and lively household. It's not too peaceful and quiet, but this is life. It's messy, but it's a lot of fun. So, and we're starting to get a little bit of sleep after a decade with a 3-year-old now. So we still get the odd night where he crawls into the bed, but it's still a pretty good season to be in.
Yeah, very cool. Well, given that you've got that wild and crazy household, three kids, all very different ages, very different stages of development, I'll just check in with you, mate. How are you going out of 10?
Yeah, doing well. I'd probably say today I'm on a 10 out of 10, but probably normally sit at about an 8. I say 10 because today's my birthday, so you might not have known that. It's thrown you under the bus there, but it's been a good day. So the kids made me breakfast, and my daughter's learned how to use the coffee machine at home, so she's figuring it out young. So I can see life's, but it's probably normally about a 7 or an 8. I'm usually pretty focused with work and different responsibilities outside of work as well, but love being a dad. It's been an absolute blessing in my life to become a father, and it's crazy. You kind of go from feeling like you're 14, even though you might be in your 20s, and then in my 20s and 30s, I'm turning 38 and now probably feel like I'm late 20s, so it's a bit crazy to feel like you're responsible for three human beings. So certainly still have that feeling even after a decade of being a dad.
That's you know, a lot of our dads are new dads or expecting dads. So, you know, we sort of look with hope at fathers like yourself. We've got the decade under their belt and you know, you're looking pretty well for it. So, but talking about a decade of parenting, in that time, what would you say are some of the highlights of your fathering and of your kids?
Yeah, it's interesting. The highlights, it's probably a mix of We have some great little family moments where we'll throw on like a Ray Charles, hit the road jack and have a little dance party, or chuck on the Bluey soundtrack when we're cleaning up the house at night, trying to get the kids involved, make it fun. So there's those little fun moments. But probably, and it might sound like a strange highlight, but when I it's going back about 8 years, and my eldest daughter, she was just one at the time. She had about 8 or 9 trips into intensive care. Wow. And so she had this bronchiolitis thing where she was just having restricted airways, needed oxygen at hospital and pretty high level of supervision. And so I say that as a highlight, not that she was sick, but just when you have that little bit of fear and trepidation of, I don't want to lose my daughter. I wanted to run a marathon with her. I want to walk her down the aisle one day. And those dreams that I probably didn't realize I'd never communicated those, but I recognized them in those moments when death and life came very close. Yeah. And so I think I'd probably say that's one of my highlights, because I think that's shaped my approach to parenting and kind of connects with my own life story, that I got run over by a car when I was 7 years old. And so I've kind of had an appreciation for life and its fragility, discovering the purpose of life. Why am I here? What can I do to help others? And I guess that's probably shaped a bit of my life outlook as well. So I'm really invested and try to be really involved with my kids, because, hey, why am I here? Is it for work? Is it for building a pile of cash? No, they're not my kind of big purposes in life. So I'm trying to look for those key relationships to prioritize. And that's been, for my parenting journey, probably one of those moments that's shifted, I reckon. And it happened right at the start of the journey, which I'm in a strange way kind of thankful that it happened, so I could learn to appreciate my kids from day dot.
Wow, that's, I mean, just incredible. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I think, you know, we often talk about how, you know, some of those negative experiences we have as kids can frame our parenting. But I think that's such a an incredible example of, that recognition of the fragility of life and bringing that gratefulness to it. That's an incredible story. And my boy's got bronchiolitis, so I definitely can relate to just the sound of them trying to breathe is such a grounding sort of experience, I guess.
And I didn't have a clue about many health conditions.
No.
Knowing that my daughter would have this, we took her to the GP just for, she's breathing a bit funny, and quarter of an hour later we're in an ambulance getting rushed to the emergency at we live in Sydney, so I was heading to the Westmead Children's Hospital, and I'm so grateful for the health system we've got. And I guess as a parent, kind of, you don't know what you don't know, but thank goodness there's experts out there, hey, that that manage health, and that can be mental health, physical health, any kind of assistance you need, there's experts out there. So very grateful for that.
No, thanks, Jeff. Jeff, I think you just use the word expert, and you have a very specific area of expertise. You work with McCrindle. I wonder if you could just introduce us to McCrindle and sort of the work that McCrindle does and what they produce, and then like what your area is within that.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, McCrindle is a social research company. So we love discovering insights and telling the story using data, but bringing it to life. And so we love to see beautiful insights lead to better outcomes. And I guess the real purpose in the business is to create kind of flourishing communities and empower kind of humans to live better, I guess is probably as simple as it gets. And it's a brilliant company. Mark McCrindle founded it, and he's written books on different generations. So he's written one just recently on Generation Alpha, those born since 2010, which is the year the iPad was launched. So those youngest, I've got 3 of those Gen Alphas. And so working with someone that's written the book on it, and I guess, how did he write the book? Well, there's some great surveys that we've done of parents. We've done research on the younger generation, as well as that demographic analysis as well. So looking at the stats and population trends. And really, it is just fascinating how society is changing. And as parents today, the way I use technology to reward my kids, probably like a pacifier for older generations that use the dummy and had different methods. So we're certainly a company that is based in Sydney. We've got a Perth office, and looking at those kind of global trends related to generations, and that's shopping, it's education, it's how we live, work, give, all the different kind of parts of life. So it's a company that has been brilliant for me. I love learning. And so part of my role is to present and kind of go to conferences and speak, and that might be to schools or charity boards or, yeah, kind of boardroom meetings for directors. So it's a real mix of presentations, but I also get to design research projects around what would be interesting to kind of collect stats on. So I get to design all these research projects and work with great clients that are, yeah, trying to solve some real big challenges in society, from whether it's growing a school as an independent school through to how does a charity, we've worked with the Salvos or RSPCA, how do they raise more funds to help great causes, even through to plans around high-speed rail and, yeah, just the future of Australia as we prepare for creating livable and excellent communities for the next generation. So it's been a great company. Yeah, I love it. I've been here 8 years and, yeah, plenty of stats. So I'm the guy at the barbecue on the weekend with the latest house price data, and I've got all the reasons why house prices aren't going down in Sydney. It's certainly a fun place to work with a stat for everything just about. So
I am definitely a nerd of all of that stuff. And I've been following McCrindle for a long time now in my work, but also just out of personal interest. And it was why I reached out to you guys to see if we could do a podcast episode, because I think it's just so fascinating. But also for parents, when you're thinking ahead of what does the future hold for our kids, and rather than just sort of take a stab in the dark and make some wild guesses, let's get some experts in who can really break open the data. So we're really grateful for your time as we look at, yeah, what does the future hold for our kids? But perhaps a good point to start with in terms of demographics and generations is, as you said, there's so many different generations. So maybe if we could just do like a broad overview of what those generations are and what are some of those key differences.
Absolutely. And I think generations is a great way to look at how a population is changing. So that's really what demographics is about. It's the study of a population to see the different groups within it. And so the six generations at the moment, we've got the oldest, which is the builders generation. And so they're approaching 80 now. So they've lived kind of since that pre-World War II period. So lived through periods of pretty global trauma, to be honest. It's a generation that grew up pretty resilient and had to be resourceful. They were a generation living on rations. And so they've kind of come up with that frugal mindset when it comes to finances, and a stitch in time saves nine. So all these little mantras and sayings, because of the conditions they were raised in, they then had the baby boomers, who are one of Australia's largest generations. So there's over 5 million baby boomers who are kind of entering those retirement years or already enjoying well-earned retirement with income that grew and assets that grew over three decades of good economic conditions, and a generation raised pretty frugally, but now able to live for some quite lavishly as they've worked hard, saved hard, and now able to play and enjoy those later stages of life. We've then got the Gen Xers. So it's a generation often called maybe the sandwich generation. They're caring up for those aging parents as well as caring for teenagers at the moment and in some peak earning and work pressure kind of years. So they're sandwiched on a few different fronts there of professional and kind of care factors. So it's Gen X. They are a really interesting generation. They kind of probably are, and the label itself is a bit of a don't define me, don't give me a label. And yet they've been defined by that. So they're quite resistant in some ways and hard to define in others, but are really, I think, a committed generation. They're a generation that probably have stayed in jobs longer, whereas as we go down the generations, the next one is the Gen Ys, also known as the millennials. And so they're not the young generation anymore. They're into their late 30s, as I'm a part of that group, and certainly even approaching those 40 early 40s. So Gen Ys hopefully moved out of home, but for some that's a real challenge. They've lived in tough times when it comes to housing affordability, but they've also kind of been facing challenges where more and more people are educated in Australia, and so you've got to work or study longer to stand out in the workplace. So people having to do that extra, whether it's postgrad or internships, to get that experience. And they're now the largest generation, the Gen Ys, in Australia. As we've kind of grown through migration, that generation has become the largest generation, almost baby boom 2.0, as they're the kids often of the baby boomers. So sort of seeing that population growth for Gen Ys. And then the last two, it's Gen Z, who are into the workforce, approaching their 30s, but still in high school as well for those Gen Zs. So they're aged 14 to 28. And the young Gen Alphas, who are global, they're visual, they're social, they're mobile, and they're digital. So they're five key words we use to define that emerging generation. And they're a fascinating generation. They'll live to the next turn of the century. So our kids, God willing, they'll live to that turn of the century with their long life expectancy in this longevity boom with great health, science, and medical, access to services. They're going to live to 2100. So it's amazing, as the new dads listening, you're raising kids that will be working and living through that next turn of the century, which is what a privilege to raise and shape that young generation.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for presenting that, because I think what's really key with parenting is there is a generational aspect to it. There's a way we were parented and how that impacts the way, or even the way our parents were parented as well. And so you've got this generational effect. But as you said, like the key characteristics to these generations are the things, the environments, the conditions of their time and how they adapted and survived through those. And, you know, hearing about what the golden generation or the
baby boomers and the builders,
hearing about some of the circumstances they face, it's just really foreign. But then so is the world that we have today to them, and so on and so forth. So I think it creates a bit of empathy of, you know, maybe my parents didn't parent the way I would have liked to or the way I want to parent, but I can look at some of those conditions, some of those factors that played into that. So thinking about, go for it, Jeff.
I think that's exactly right. And even the age at which, and when we're having kids, we're delaying those key life markers because we're studying for longer, working harder and longer till we can afford or move out of home or get married. Those life markers have all been delayed. So we're now having kids. The median age for new parents, for dads, is now 33. Mm. So it's not even in the early 30s. Well, kind of is in the early 30s. Sorry to any dads listening if I'm bagging you out there. But you're mid-30s at 33, I reckon. So it's an interesting thing. Hopefully we're a little bit more mature, whereas maybe those younger dads in previous generations were raised by some pretty, men with some different levels of emotional maturity and the conditions they were raised in by parents who'd been involved perhaps with World War II, some pretty traumatic times. And so that emotional intelligence, I think, is growing. And even one of the key stats, I had to mention it, so I'll get it in nice and early, is there was a study in 2019 that asked 1,000 dads, have you ever asked for advice? And so it's a question I think is really interesting, because the results actually show that 45% of fathers have never asked for advice.
Wow.
So I hope all the dads listening are even hearing advice through your podcast. So well done to create a context for learning. But what's fascinating is it's 57%. It goes up for dads that have kids over the age of 18. So you can appreciate, older dads probably were less likely to ask for help, whereas for younger dads who've got kids under the age of 18, it's down at 29%. So the point is that the younger dads are asking for more help, so hopefully showing that little bit more of emotional intelligence and just seeking advice. That's such a key thing as a dad, is you don't have all the answers. You don't start with a manual when you find out you're pregnant or come home from hospital. They don't give you you get a medical book to keep that blue book, but it's certainly, where's the parenting manual? Well, there's a community, hopefully, that's got some of those insights you might need and support you through that journey.
You sort of addressed Gen X, the boomers, you really had the impact of the war. I wonder if, thinking about the dads that will be listening to this podcast, let's say they're new and expecting dads, they're typically going to be Gen Ys like yourself and myself. Typically having Gen Alpha kids, and typically, again, like just roughly speaking, you're going to have Gen X parents or even boomer parents. So I wonder if we could look at what are some of those things, as you mentioned, like the war really affected the way parenting would have happened in the context of parenting, that men were becoming fathers a lot earlier in life. So some of that emotional maturity may have, you know, still been developing. But I wonder, what are some of the other factors in each of those generations that would have shaped how particularly men fathered and parented?
Yeah, I think the economic conditions would have been a key factor. So coming out of that war period, man's role would have typically been to provide, and it wasn't the social climate that women worked as a full-time job. And so that's changed dramatically for current parents, where we now have those sort of dual income homes. So quite a difference in terms of the economic conditions through to even the technology for the baby boomers. One of the biggest kind of global impacting events would have been seeing the man walk on the moon on TV, and it was a live event. So I think that technology that was radio-based probably predominantly through to TV, it's so different now for dads, and I'm at that age now where I'm wrestling with what's screen time look like with TVs, with iPads, with phones, how many hours a day am I going to let? I know that the recommended sort of 1 to 2 hours of screen time outside of school, but man, we're wrestling with that digital access so much more today, I think, than previous generations. However, TVs I know would have been addictive as kids, but certainly in my home, it was half an hour a week, and my kids just kind of, it just doesn't compute that I only got half an hour of TV a week. Maybe my parents were strangers, kind of those baby boomers. But I think just that, the technology, the economic conditions, and even the social climate, I think there was just probably that little bit more of a sense of society being a little bit safer. And certainly there's been some real issues in the last couple of decades around some of the Royal Commission into Child Abuse, and places that people thought were safe, unfortunately weren't. But back in the day, I could, as a kid, when I was growing up, I could ride my bike anywhere after school. And as long as I could get home, I was part of that generation that could ride. And as long as I told mum where I was and was home before dark, I was pretty fine. And I think that seems to be for the older generations as well. They could roam far and wide and just be home for dinner, or that you'd cop a clip over the ears for that generation. So quite a different approach to that safety and that kind of distance traveled, that perceived safe community that I think has eroded, unfortunately. So we're probably a little bit more helicopter parents at the moment, making sure we're drones hovering above them. Yeah. And are they safe? Are they okay? We're constantly surveying them.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting too, because as you mentioned previously, the longevity of life of these generations, where, you know, we do still have boomers and Gen X are very heavily involved in society, and McCrindle's produced plenty of studies and reports about the multi-generational workplace. But really, families have become much more multi-generational too. And I think, you know, there are a lot of people our age who not only have grandparents, but great-grandparents still alive. So it's just a fascinating sort of dynamic to consider, again, like all these different factors that played into what formed the parenting values or the family values of each generation, because they do interact still today. Like, you know, many parents, you know, hand over the kids to the grandparents and say, right, no, there's no, you know, really putting in some firm guidelines, because it is such a different understanding now to the way we were parented, even of our generation, of the dads listening. Like the way we were parents, it's so different to how, you know, some of those expectations and conditions we have today.
And understanding, I think, that family of origin is a great conversation to have with your partner and discuss what that was like being a kid, and even have it with your parents as well. What was it like for them to be kids? What did their parents do? And to actually intentionally review each kind of condition or choice and the principles that we parent by, because why mum and dad did certain things might not make sense for today's climate. And as you said, longevity boom that we live in is a real thing. We've got access to people living longer to support us into our and help us develop our careers, our businesses. We know that there's more kind of side hustles for people who are looking to build up that wealth as they're trying to buy a home or kind of stay afloat, even just in a rental environment as well. So certainly a great conversation to have across the generations of, hey, what guided your parenting decisions, or what were those key moments that influenced your parenting decisions? And I think for my, I'm really grateful for my mum and dad. They were brilliant parents, not always perfect, but they were brilliant, and really thankful for, the way dad would play sport with us and take us to games on the weekend and be the coach or the manager running around 8 a.m. freezing on a Saturday morning. It's kind of impacted me. So when we were coming out of the Sydney lockdowns, I was out there with the kids on the street when formal sport hadn't started, but I was the cricket coach in the street. Had a great crew of kids in our little neighborhood, and just having a lot of fun building those moments for kids to connect, learn new skills, learn how to not chuck such a big sook when you get caught and bowled or get caught out. And just those practical life skills that you learn in a community environment like team sports or community groups, et cetera.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head there about the importance of communication. Like, you know, in any sort of multi-generational environment, that communication is what breaks down the barriers, but especially with a family, when you have that, you know, sort of vulnerable life that you're trying to raise up as a village within that family context, like that communication is going to be what really breaks down the barriers and creates that sort of shared idea of how we're, you know, sort of preparing this child for life and for the world.
I think just on that as well, Adam, I think that probably one of the shifts is that there's some real great research now that's showing the benefits of involved fathers. And I think that's probably changed where probably dads thought, well, my job is to be the provider. Mm-hmm. I think we're probably in that more kind of co-laboring role now as parents, husbands and wives or partners, really investing into their kids. But there's some great benefits for dads that do get involved. It leads to better outcomes in the kids' physical health, cognitive development, emotional development, kind of even just their happiness levels are better with an involved father. Whereas I think for older generations, being a dad probably was just that little bit more disengaged and kids get outside, stop being noisy, just some of those mantras that you hear from different generations. So I think, you know, just a very practical thing I think dads can do is be involved in things like, it can be homework or it can be the bedtime routine, finding those ways to kind of really support even just decision-making. And I've stuffed it up so many times as a kid, a teenager, a young adult, even as an adult, but just to be open and get down to eye level with my kids when they're really frustrated and having a meltdown. And I sometimes have my own little meltdowns, not being very mature as an adult. So I'm not perfect in these moments, but occasionally I get it right where I'll kind of come down to their level and just be like, yeah, I can remember when I was a kid and I didn't get what I wanted and this is what I did and this is how I did or didn't deal with it well. And so just being involved in helping them with those real life decisions when you're 7 and you don't get the Pokemon cards that you want, oh boy, that's a challenge in my house at the moment. So
It's amazing. Of all the things that have changed between generations, Pokemon is the one constant.
it's true from my generation down to this one. So, yeah, a lot of fun. Mario Kart's the other one. That's true. We grew up playing Mario. It was on the Super Nintendo. Now they're on all the latest Switch and whatnot. So it's a bit of fun.
you sort of hit on a couple of things there in terms of like families really focusing on that, you know, trying to save to, you know, stay afloat in the property market. You're talking just then about some of the really positive influences, dads, and outcomes that come out of being engaged and involved dads. And actually, Dads Group is a response to some of that data. And we've partnered with a university, and there was a research project that came out of there that we really tried to align the two. So, for all our dads listening, like, you're part of that shift and that change. But I wonder, what are some of the other emerging trends for our generation that's really impacting and changing the way that we parent? What are some of those sort of contemporary issues or problems or even opportunities that is shaping how we're parenting and fathering today?
Yeah, I think it's probably just even those societal shifts that are changing, where we've got greater cultural diversity in Australia right now. We've got 1 in 4 Australians who was born overseas. So I think we're learning more about different world kind of events, different global events, which are available digitally and kind of come into our feeds pretty quickly. And that helps us, whether it's neighbors or kids in the playground or meeting the different parents in parenting groups. You're going to meet parents of different cultures that have different practices and values. And I think as that shift from European migration to Asian migration in Australia, we're in the Asian century right now. And that's certainly changing, I think, those kind of community dynamics. And I think there's a lot of positive in that. We're learning to appreciate those different cultural values and certainly some pretty strong family values that are coming through. I think of our lovely Indian neighbors up the street that we've been over there, had just incredible connections and just a really strong family unit. So pretty powerful, I guess, opportunities when you think through those social trends. But even that, I guess, growing understanding about emotional health. And sadly, in Australia, 1 in 5 Australians will suffer a mental health condition. And so learning even as parents and partners or with your mates, with your friends, how to look out for one another. I love that you opened that question with about how am I going out of 10? Because certainly there's days where you could have caught me on a 3 or a 2 and you have tough days as a dad, and if a few things don't go well on a day, things can feel like they're falling apart. So I think we're probably in an era where as parents we've got a lot more awareness and less stigma about mental health. And I'm really thankful for those changes. And there's a lot of people that deserve credit for that. And I think in every workplace, in every family, there's probably those advocates and champions of well-being, and we've got to celebrate them for what they've done. And that could be in the community, that could be in the workplace or a sporting team, and just someone that does those little, hey, how are you going, those little check-in moments. So great job being one of those well-being champions yourself, Adam. It's really cool to see that, because the quality of our life as dads will affect the quality and impact and outcomes of our children. As there is more research around that, that if as dads we're getting exercise, we're looking after ourselves mentally, we're going to find that that leads to us making better decisions. And as parents, it leads, I know even one of the stats says it leads to improved physical, mental, and sexual health. So dads, look after yourself. It's going to lead to better sex. So I'll just throw that in there as well, because it's going to help all the dads listening right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a bit selfish, but.
I just, the idea came when you mentioned about the how you're going out of 10, like I should go back through all the episodes and just, you know, sort of table all the responses that people have given, and what's the average rating of guests on the Dad's Group podcast out of 10?
Yeah. I think it's a good thing for dads to be able to actually locate how they're going and just pause and take a moment. I'm probably a bit strange as a guy. I love to journal. I love doing that once a week just to get my thoughts out and kind of connect how I'm feeling with what I'm doing. I've been, I've had my own kind of mental health journey where I had anxiety kind of in that period when my daughter was quite unwell, and it was pretty stressful. And so I was really thankful to get some great tips from a psychologist around some cognitive therapy behavior kind of principles that I've sort of taken on my journey. And yeah, certainly encourage people, if you're not doing it well, that's okay. You're not doing anything wrong. It's a great chance to reach out, because if you can get that support, ask for help for yourself or as a parent, that's going to lead to better outcomes for you and your partner and your kids. So it's nothing wrong with having a bad day or a low period. That kind of question just can raise it to the surface and help people make some, hopefully, some positive steps forward.
Absolutely. No, thank you. So I wonder then if we can sort of shift to looking at our kids. So we'd say they're all sort of Generation Alpha, and so I wonder how would we characterize that generation? Like, what are we seeing in that generation currently? And maybe we'll start with that before we really get into what's the future look like. That's the part I'm really geeking out about at the moment. So
yeah, it's great. Yeah, I think for our youngest generation, Gen Alpha, they've lived through something that kind of no other generations lived through as kids. They've been through potentially long lockdowns or short lockdowns, depending on where you live. It's been some interesting conversations with my daughter saying, I never went through lockdowns as a kid. I didn't have to do school from home. And what they've learned, and I guess the skills of being organized and being self-directed learners, that's kind of, that's quite advanced from when I was a kid. That never happened for me. So certainly a few of those conditions that have shaped this generation, and probably the other key factor is the technology element of having devices surrounding them. Probably going back 5 years, there was a trend prediction that said in the home we would have 7 devices per person by 2020. Now, we get there pretty quickly when you add up your smartwatch, your iPad, your phone, your work computer, your laptop, your game console. If you've got one smart device, an Alexa or a kind of a virtual vacuum robot or whatever it might be, we get there. So that tech kind of influence, and that's probably one of the big pressures parents are wrestling with, is they don't want their kids to miss out. They don't want to withhold technology and disadvantage a child into a digital future, because a lot of the jobs of the future are going to be in sort of data analytics, data visualization, robotics, AI, kind of whether it's in crypto finance in the future, we'll have crypto finance advisors or whatever it might be. We don't want to disadvantage our kids, and yet we're wrestling as parents with that balance of green time and screen time. We want to make sure they're making friends offline and know how to play with kids and get out in nature and get some mental health benefits from some of those activities. So I think parents are really wrestling with, what does that look like? What's too much screen time? And but I just need a break. So I'm just going to do it again and put on another episode of Bluey, please, and let them relax, and I'll get some downtime as well. So it's certainly, I think, one of those tension points parents are really wrestling right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I saw on the on McCrindle's Gen Alpha sort of profile, one of the future career sort of opportunities was a self-driving train operator, which the paradox of that just sort of confused me. I went into a bit of a spin over what does an operator of a self-driving train look like? But I think, as you say, like this is like we're looking at a whole sort of different environment that our children will sort of be in and working in and leading and sort of pushing forward.
Yeah, that's right. And it's those jobs of the future they're going to be the ones working in. And there's even a stat around 65% of today's primary kids will work in jobs that don't yet exist.
Yeah.
So whether it's that driverless train operator, it is a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? But it really is saying if you know Sydney's metro, it's a driverless train. There might be one person who's driving 18 of them from the desk monitoring them. So they're not really driving them, but I think we've got those jobs of the future in renewable consultant, kind of energy consultants. We're going to have, is it a space tourism agent or is it going to be a kind of augmented reality kind of designer? So there's going to be these jobs that just spin us out that we go, that's going to be a career. And I think our parents would be doing the same when they find out people are social media managers. They're what, a job managing Facebook? What? How could you get paid doing that? Tell you what, that's what a lot of companies are looking for, is great people to do social media, tell their story, grow their business, engage with younger generations. And I think as parents, it's a real wrestling point, but certainly some great insights in the book Mark McCrindle wrote on Generation Alpha. He interviewed a few psychologists around what are some of those good practices around setting expectations and communicating kind of the advantages as well as what are those healthy limits? So there's some great tips in that book for people that want to dive a bit deeper into that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's do it. Let's look at what does the future look like for our kids. So why don't we start with education? What are some of the trends that we're seeing now in terms of, you know, we've already seen, you know, some of that self-directed learning, at-home learning, parents trying to reteach themselves mathematics learning. Like, you know, it's there's been such a shift, but what could we sort of predict forwards from where education is at now?
I guess at the end of the journey of education, you'd probably think of tertiary and getting a degree. And for Gen Xers, one in four Gen Xers got a degree, went up to one in three for the Gen Ys, and one in two Gen Zs is forecast to get a tertiary level degree. So for Gen Alpha to stand out in the workplace, they're going to need little bit of an X factor, whether that's, I've been running my own business or I've got experience because I've done the internship, the gap year. And I guess that journey to work is going to be different for this generation who're going to have access to online short courses. It's that digital learning environment that they're going to walk right into. And so I guess even the learning experience themselves, they've had a taste of learning from home, and we've surveyed adults who are working and found that 62% want a hybrid environment where a bit of time at the office and a bit of time at home is what they'd like. But for Gen Zs, that goes up to 82% when they get into the workforce. They want to have that hybrid. So you can expect that even schools will start to consider, and this is quite a big shift that could happen for Gen Alphas, is that schools could look to find ways as they go into those more senior years, hey, how do you create some of that flexibility in where education or group work happens? Because does that need to be on a school site? Could it be at the co-working space at the local shopping center, or is it in with industry partnering with local businesses to get out and kind of have real world experience in the workplace as people do those kind of senior years and have a bit of maturity and would be safe in community? So I think we'll see that shift of, I guess, that learning and what education level, but even the way that they're learning will be quite different for Gen Alpha. So schools will be, I guess, probably adapting to this kind of last 3-4 year period that we've been through. And that's going to take some time for those kind of big, slow moving, aircraft carriers to turn. Schools aren't often that agile, but you'll find providers out there that say, hey, I can provide online education for your child with some interactive days. And I reckon they will suit a lot of kids and families that say, yeah, we want to do the remote living, whether that's moving out of the big city to a coastal area or even in a big city. They just save all the commute time. What a headache commute is for a for parents that are just thinking, oh, why am I stuck in traffic? I could be spending quality time with family or being productive in work. So I think some of those social settings will really shape education for Gen Alpha.
It's funny because we did an episode recently with an acting principal at a big state high school here in Brisbane, and he was talking about already we're seeing this increased involvement of parents within child's education, of where previously you dropped the kid off at the gate and it was sort of you'd left the education part to the school, but parents are more engaged in wanting results in the results that their kids are getting. There's an increased communication and presence physically within the school, but also contact with the school. So I guess it, you know, hearing that idea of like, yeah, the sort of distance learning, but as part of like contemporary schooling, I think it's not that big of a hop, skip and a jump. When you look at what happened in COVID, you sort of see this trend emerging of parents being more engaged. It's sort of like, it sounds a bit out there, but I think for our dads listening, like, it's really not that big of a jump. So yeah, I think that's really fascinating. Yeah.
And jumping off what you're saying there about kind of parents being involved more with school, I think that's exactly right. And even the communication demands of younger generations, it's putting pressure on schools. They're experiencing what we'd call the expectation inflation, where you think of baby boomers who probably got a report once every, maybe it was an annual report, but now we're at 6 monthly reports. And when I was at school, we were getting sent home sort of a weekly or fortnightly newsletter. But man, I get daily app notifications, photos, core competency learnings of things from a preschool. And so that communication expectation of parents has certainly risen. Schools are feeling that pressure. And I think probably appropriately pushing back going, you don't need a daily update on how little Johnny's going. I think that's going to be an interesting one that parents just probably need to trust a little bit, but it's great to see that engagement and involvement, whether it's in co-curricular or just even that presence. But certainly I think teachers feel that pressure of, man, I've got 30 individual kids to teach a personalized approach to. How do I do that in a way that's going to reduce some of the admin and not cause more stress for teachers? That, yeah, 1 in 3 teachers was feeling extremely or very burnt out in our last survey. So certainly thankful for the work teachers have done over the last few years. Absolutely. To any dads that are listening that are teachers, big shout out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Education sort of verges on that employment question as well, and we've sort of touched a bit on some of the barriers to entry into the workplace out of school. But I wonder how else will employment and work continue to grow and develop? Obviously, we're moving into that more tech, autonomous AI sort of space. But what else could we say about the work environment that our kids will be growing into?
Yeah, I think the workplace of the future is going to be fascinating. You mentioned multi-generational before. You've done your homework. It's good to see, because that's exactly what it will be. And we've got, I guess, a shift that's going to occur in the workplace over the next decade, where it will go from being sort of Gen X and Gen Ys as the majority to being Gen Ys and Gen Zs as the majority. So as Gen Alphas kind of merge in sort of the next decade into work, they're going to be kind of looking up at their big brother generationally at Gen Zs. And Gen Zs, it's actually forecast, will have 18 different jobs across 6 different careers.
Wow.
And that's based on a job tenure of less than 3 years per job.
Yeah.
And so that's been falling as we move around and chase that better pay, better conditions, better team, less toxic environment, a dodgy manager we're trying to get away from. So I think all those factors lead to, as parents, we've got to kind of really keep an eye out on building those transferable skills and developing a great work ethic. But I often talk about, and probably just a bit more casually chat about how we often talk about engagement with this generation. And even for my generation at work, we do engagement surveys, not commitment surveys, because you kind of, we've shifted a bit from a generation of commitment to a generation of engagement. And so I think just, it's not a bad thing to be loyal and to consider what does that look like to demonstrate commitment and persevere through some hard moments. And I think there's a lot of sweat that can go into work that I wouldn't want. I wouldn't want kids missing out on some of those hard-earned lessons that every generation before has experienced. Just, you don't want them to leave a job too quickly. So I think probably just zooming out though, in terms of while there might be a lot of different jobs, probably it's good to know that tech's going to be a key influencer, but it's not really its own industry. Every industry is going to be influenced, whether it's construction is going to be a huge industry as our population goes from 26 million to 40 million in the next 27 years. By 2040, we'll be at 50 million people in Australia. So, by 2050, we'll be at 40 million. I got that the wrong way. So 2050, we'll be at 40. Getting a bit excited talking pop stats. But the construction boom is going to have a tech edge. Yeah. Education, if people go into teaching, is going to have a tech edge. If you're in nursing or health, that's going to be another key growing industry. So that care, while it's going to have a person-centric approach, you're still going to need to use technology. So I think learning digital kind of intelligence and cultural intelligence is going to be key for kids today, along with kind of finding that right fit. Because, I don't think we need to box every kid in and say you've got to become a robotics specialist and STEM is crucial. We certainly want to see more women in STEM. But I think there are some great industries at the moment that are going to be growing. But we'll see probably a little bit more either entrepreneurial, or what we called one of the trends for the year for 2023 was the rise of the intrapreneur, which is someone that wants a little bit of reward, but with less risk of being their own business owner. So probably workplaces that can create that culture and some, whether it's financial or real opportunity for people to take some risks, but with a little bit of safety, I think that's going to be key for the younger generations into the future.
Yeah. And again, for our dads listening, like who are managers or business owners and that sort of thing, these are the sort of things that, you know, the generation of your kids will very soon be your employees. Taking some of this, both from a fathering viewpoint, but if you're a business owner or a manager or someone in that position, that this is very vital information as well. What about with families and relationships? Like, we know that the family has changed a lot, that, you know, image of the family around the dinner table is a bit more fragmented now, with, you know, even teenagers having jobs now and the multiplicity of things that families are involved in. So what could we say about what families will look like, even, you know, the size of families that the Gen Alpha will be starting when they get to that stage?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it before. There'll be, I think, more of those multi-generational homes. And even if it's not in the home, it'll be more multi-generational approach to raising children, where the grandparents play a bigger role as they, and that might be, if they've moved out of a cap city, say they moved from Brisbane up to the Sunshine Coast, but hey, they might come down once a month and do that day, or it's the couple of days in a holidays of extra care and investment into the kids. So I think there's that part. I think the home front as well, we're going to see probably that declining birth rate shows that we're going to have fewer children per family as well. So that's just been a global trend, pretty Western trend as well, that we have fewer kids per family. And I think that probably raises the need for those social interactions. And while a lot of digital interactions are positive, where are those community touch points? And so I think really the school has become the center of a community. And if not the school, it's the shopping center, which is that place where parents can connect and kids can play. And so we're seeing that redesign of shopping centers that now are becoming a lot more family friendly place for interaction. And I actually heard one shopping center manager say that they don't want your money. What they actually want is your time, because that will spend money once you're there. but as parents, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for things to do with our kids. We've got days to fill, weekends and activities that we want to create great experiences for our children. We want to have fun. We want to create memories. We want to share them on social media. Mm-hmm. And so I think the great kind of connection is that communities and families will find those places to build great memories. And that might be holidays or daily activities, those weekend treats. And I think it's something that shifted in COVID as well, is that after the lockdowns, people were prepared to spend a little bit more money on those kind of family experiences, because we lost holidays, we couldn't go out for the special treats. Now we're prepared to spend lavishly on those kind of what might now be a pretty regular thing, but we've like, no, this is important. We're not going to miss out again. So I think that's probably the change that, we're going to see families investing into their own little. And it might seem a little bit insular, but I don't actually think that's a bad thing. I think there's been a bit of a prioritization of families as we all slowed down. We thought about what matters in life, and it was confronting facing those mortality stats and on a daily basis, the 11 a.m. updates from premiers, et cetera. We probably didn't know how we were being impacted psychologically at the time. But I think that's where we've reevaluated our life priorities. And I would absolutely encourage people to do those life visions and write down your purpose and your plans, your goals, your principles you're going to live by, and even chat with your partner about what are the values you want to teach your kids? Because I think we're a little bit more intentional because we've gone through this crisis period, now come out with a little bit more of a I don't want to say goals outcome. I think it's more of a relational outcome that we're seeking. And so we want to find the best way to parent, and we'll draw on resources. We'll draw on those shopping center playgrounds that, take some of my money, but just help us have a good experience as a mum or dad. And that's going to be key for the future, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I mean, we're seeing that with our dad's groups at the our local groups, and sort of just taking over cafes with playgrounds or taking over the local park. And yeah, I definitely think we're post-COVID, there's been this surge towards the public space and the public sphere, which I guess leads to sort of last area I'd like to ask you about is just broadly speaking, what is society and culture? What are the trends there that we're looking at for our kids as they grow? That, you know, what's the world around them going to look like, and how will it impact them?
Yeah, I think it's a much more fluid society that we live in at the moment, whether it's from gender fluidity, conversations around sexual orientation. So I think creating environments for really accepting and healthy conversations is going to be key. And parents might have a range of different views. Even your dad's listening might have different views, but just creating respectful, intelligent conversations, I think, is going to be key. We're going to live in greater cultural diversity. We're going to live in different religious plurality as well. And so it's fascinating in Australia's society. We've kind of got just under one in two that identify as a Christian. We've got about 40% that think there's no sort of religion, identify as secular. So pretty polarizing conditions. And yet hopefully parents can raise kids in a way that creates culturally sensitive and really socially, I guess, agile children, because there are some complexities that we're living through at the moment that are really crucial for well-being, for mental health, for kids and members of society. So I think these are some challenging times in some ways that probably earlier parents, earlier generations may not have had to deal with some of these issues, let alone when you overlay technology and even the economic conditions. It's a pretty difficult time right now to be a parent, and particularly I'm a Sydney dad, and so I've got books on my bookshelf called My 4-Year-Old, The Property Investor. I've got, even in that Gen Alpha book, the forecast is for Sydney kind of Gen Alpha kids, they're going to be buying a $4 million medium price home by 2040. And that's just with the price doubling every decade, which is only 7% compound. So if the market's that slow, only a $4 million. So really, I guess those teaching kids probably that financial literacy is a key factor as well. We want to, and there's some stuff on the World Economic Forum around what are those characteristics and competencies for today's emerging generation. And there's things like financial literacy, cultural literacy, as well as sort of that basic numeracy and language literacy as well. So I think keeping abreast of some of those broader trends as you're kind of asking me those questions is key for parents to raise kids that are well prepared for a future that's going to have some challenges. But I already think Gen Alpha have got an advantage. They've lived through a crisis that probably the previous two generations, if not three, didn't have to live through, probably at that level of crisis. I think for Gen Y, the big crisis was the 9/11 Terrorism Act, and that certainly showed up for my generation, for my school, my group of friends. We were very culturally insensitive. We said things to some of our friends that were really inappropriate at that time, and I wish I could go back and change that. And I think as a generation, we've learned to become more culturally intelligent because we were very immature as young kids in that experience of global terrorism. So I think probably it's a dark topic there to land, but I think the point is to say for Gen Alpha, they're globally aware. Yeah. They've got to be digitally literate and yet mentally able to look after their own emotional well-being. So there's certainly, I think for a dad, you might be sitting back thinking, oh, what have I got myself into? But the beauty of having podcasts like this and great resources, there's plenty of great insights that you can access that will really help you. And I think we're in a better position even now with technology, with devices, online access to materials. It's a great time to be a dad. And I think there's a lot of fun to be had as well, because we're we've never done it before. So you just got to give yourself a bit of grace as well, I think, as a dad to try and learn and chat and reflect on what works, what doesn't work. And I often joke that I call myself a pragmatic parent. I'm just doing what works. And if it doesn't work, chuck it out. If it's not leading to good outcomes, chuck it out. Pragmatic parenting, I think, is probably my approach, that do what works. And that's different for every parent. So I hope that gives permission for dads to give it a crack and find your own style.
Yeah.
And if in doubt, go and watch Bluey and just copy band it.
Absolutely. Look, usually I ask a question, go back to when your children were born, go back to the delivery room. But given that you're a social commentator, given, you know, this breadth of data that, and research you have access to, I want to go forwards, actually. So I want you to, I want to ask you to imagine going forwards to when your kids have their kids. And I guess what do you hope? I'm hitting you out of the blue on this one. I didn't prep for this. So it just came in. But what would you imagine for yourself of, like, how would you want to see yourself as a father at that point? And what would be your hopes, say, for your eldest daughter? What would be your hopes for her at that point in her life? Again, given this context that we've sort of been exploring in this episode.
I probably am pretty ambitious with my kids. I want them to be like little Renaissance men and women, and I want them to know the arts, science, religions. I want them to understand the importance of being alone as well as being part of a community. And I want them to fail at things. I want them to fall over and skid their knees playing cricket on the street, soccer on the road. It's not very safe, some of my parenting, but I want them to be able to create safe environments where their kids can do a little bit of risk and even as a parent to know that you're just making it up as you go. Like I'm exactly doing that. And I'd want my kids to know that when you become a parent, you don't have to have all the answers, but I think the part that I'm really passionate about as a parent is just having great communication, and that's with your kids, with your partner, and even just your own emotional self-awareness. Am I doing what I want to be doing right now? And if I'm not, am I aware of it? Can I change that behavior? Can I get out of that loop of stinking thinking, is one of the things my psychologist taught me, that sometimes you can just get stuck in a doom loop. And it's, I think creating children that can mature into, I'm being a bit ambitious, I know, so no pressure on my kids if you're ever listening to this, because just give it a go, I'll be gracious. But I think creating those well-rounded individuals, yes, be ready for a tech world, but be great at relationships, know how to meet strangers and smile and interact, but be safe and respectful and not rush into things either. And some of that cybersecurity stuff as well. So there's so many different facets, aren't there? It's such a great question.
And look, I'm sure your kids will never listen to this, because just like the cassettes of our era, this will be an ancient technology. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Why'd you play those off?
It'll be somewhat comes out in the future, won't it?
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, I'm super, super grateful for your time and not just sharing about all of this data that McCrindle has done such an excellent job of collecting and collating and sort of disseminating for us, but also just bringing your own personal story. And I just love that image of you playing cricket with the kids in the street. And I just think that for a lot of our dads, you've grounded this. I think the future can look really scary, particularly in the last little bit when we had stuff like COVID that just seemed really heavy and big and all-consuming. But I just really wanted to say thank you for, I guess, shining a light on what are some of the really positive or exciting things that lie ahead for us as Gen Ys, but also for our kids in the world that they're going to, that they're already shaping, but that they'll inherit in a fuller way in the future. So thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us on the podcast.
Been a pleasure. And I think just being an involved dad's the key, that, just being alongside your kids, communicating with your partner, and that's, if you're doing those two things, things will work out well. So just be present and be open. So I really am grateful to be here, and thanks for taking the time to get some stats into a podcast. And also hopefully these stories have helped, and happy for people to reach out as well if they've got any other questions. So the free resources are all on our website for Generation Alpha, the infographic. So definitely check that out. That'll certainly help a number of your dads.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Cheers.
Awesome. And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.